All right, so today we're going to continue in our series on Are You Covenanted? This is part 23. Part 23. We're in the book of Proverbs, in Mishle, in Proverbs, and we're endeavoring to try to get through chapter 3. It's been a little bit of a struggle. No, it hasn't been. It's been really good to take the time to allow whatever the Ruach wants to do as we're reading the verses. All right, now remember, what we're looking at here, and just continuing in case somebody may in the future be listening to this, and they didn't listen to part 22, like right before 23. Maybe they waited a week between parts or more. Or maybe you haven't really thought about this since last week. And so just a reminder that we're in a section now of the covenant issues of understanding the role or the connection between wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. In other words, the relational aspects and covenant keeping. That's the focus here in Proverbs, is trying to make sure we're connecting that as we are walking in a thing called covenant, which was the simple basic agreement in Exodus 19 of as long as you're willing to obey and do everything that comes out of my mouth. Yahweh says, if you do everything I say, I will accept you as my people and take care of everything else. And so it's an agreement to mechanically do and not do, which is what a covenant is. It's an agreement between two parties to do and not do specified things. And in the Torah, in your Bible, in your scriptures, Yahweh specifically lays out those things. He specifies what he wants you to do and what he doesn't want you to do. But he also has the other half of this equation, which is the approach, the emotion, the heart, the parts that are driving why, you know, what you're doing and why you're doing it. That your attitude, your character is driven not just by the desire to get the check mark and smiley face sticker because you happen to do the right mechanics. So it's not just about mechanics here. So Proverbs is much more concerned with what's behind your what's the motivator behind your mechanics. Are you doing it just because, well, you know, he said if I do this, he'll take care of everything and I get to live forever and I want that. But he doesn't want you to just want that because the living forever is a relational thing because when we read Revelation, he will be here amongst us in that forever period, in that time frame called forever in the kingdom. And so he wants us to have a relationship that's appropriate in relating with him so that when we live forever with him, we have that right relationship. The same thing in that time frame called the forever kingdom. All of us hopefully are going to be there, and we need to understand how that relationship needs to be and how it's to function. And it needs to function, I believe, with these three major concepts called wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. And so that's what we've been trying to kind of wrestle with and get to understand here. So let's get into chapter 3 of Proverbs, and we left off on verse 14. But I'm going to go ahead and quickly read through to verse 14 without, hopefully without stopping, so we kind of remember where we are. My son, verse 1, do not forget my Torah. Let your heart watch over my commands for length of days and long life, and peace they add to you. Let not kindness and truth forsake you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart, thus finding favor and good insight in the eyes of Elohim and man. Trust in Yahweh with all your heart. And lean not on your own understanding. Know him in all your ways, and he makes all your paths straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear Yahweh and turn away from evil. It is healing to your navel and moistening to your bones. Esteem Yahweh with your goods and with the first fruits of your increase, of all your increase. Then your storehouses shall be filled with plenty, and your vats overflow with new wine. My son, do not despise the discipline of Yahweh. Do not loathe his reproof. For whom Yahweh loves, he reproves, and as a father the son, whom he delights in. Blessed is the man who has found wisdom, and the man who gets understanding. For the gain from it is better than the gain of silver, and its increase than fine gold. So look at how we have this all set up to this point. He's saying, look, I want you to not forget the Torah. This is part of the covenant that the person that's being described in verse 17 of chapter 2 did. They forgot. They forsook the covenant. He said, don't forget the Torah. But the Torah is all about relationship. And he says, length of days, peace, etc. It's going to give you all this good stuff. He says, it's going to heal you. It's going to do all these wonderful things. And you need to value it. He says you got to value it more than gold, more than silver. So it's not just recognizing what it does and saying, okay, I'll do what you say. But do you value it? Do you hold it up in the right level of preciousness and value as the most precious valued thing you can have? And not because it's just going to give you eternal life, but because it's going to give you relationship. It's going to build you that proper relationship with your Creator. He also reminds us that in valuing this, we should also appreciate that when he reproves us, that he's doing it so that we don't lose what he's offered us, that we don't forsake it, that we don't forget and maybe have a callous disregard or be complacent or some other thing that's going to cause you to loosen up and forget eventually that there is a covenanting relationship where, remember again, the covenanting relationship is a specified list of things to do and not do. With the case in Yahweh's case, to do and not do with a proper approach, proper relationship. So that's where we are at this point. And we get to verse 15 and we're continuing in this idea of the value. She is more precious than rubies and all your delights are not comparable to her. Length of days is in her right hand, riches and esteem in her left hand. Wow. What is being described here? Remember, it goes back to verse 13. Wisdom. Blessed is the man who has found wisdom. Wisdom is referred to as the she here. Wisdom is more precious than rubies, and all your delights are not comparable to wisdom. Length of days is in wisdom's right hand, riches and esteem in wisdom's left hand. Wisdom's ways are pleasant ways, and all wisdom's paths are peace. Wisdom is a tree of life to those taking hold of it. Can we all understand that sometimes we confuse wisdom and intellect? Okay, so a lot of people go, well, you know, that was just stupid. Well, maybe it wasn't stupid, maybe it was unwise. And there's a difference. Or somebody goes, oh, I'm just not smart like so-and-so. Well, maybe it's not about smart. It's about wise. Got a lot of very smart people with high intellect doing very unwise things. We got a lot of people out there that don't have maybe the highest intellect in the world who are doing much wiser things. You don't need to have a high intellect to embrace wisdom. That's kind of the point. So nobody needs to sit there going, well, you know, I didn't really ever finish the fifth grade and I'm really not that smart. Doesn't have anything to do with being smart. You don't need to be a Bible scholar to understand this book. What you have to have is a right heart and a teacher, a guide. And so here we're being told to value wisdom. A lot of people are valuing intellect, smarts, knowledge and information. Knowledge as an informational thing, not knowledge as a relational thing. Because they want to only focus on their intellect. It doesn't say intellect is more precious than rubies. Wisdom. It takes wisdom to humble yourself and come under authority. The intellectual may think, no, I'm smart enough to figure this out myself. I don't need any help. But it takes wisdom to understand that no matter how smart you are, the system is designed by the Creator for you to need help. Because some of you are thinking, well, you know, I tried to study the Bible, but I'm just not smart enough. It has nothing to do with smart enough. The smartest people out there can't understand everything in the Bible. They need wisdom and guidance. And that comes from anointed people who are put in a position to provide that guidance with the help of the Ruach HaKodesh, the Holy Spirit. Are we in line here? Do we understand? So because some of you are thinking, well, you know, I don't really study that much because I'm not that smart. No, actually, the fact that you're not studying is actually the part of it that's not that smart. But really, it's unwise. It has nothing to do with smarts. You see the definition? You may think about it being, well, that's dumb. No, it's unwise. Wisdom dictates that you study his word, not intelligence. Intelligence doesn't dictate that. Is it the smart thing to do? Yeah, it's the smart thing to do, but it really has more to do with wisdom. Because wisdom is all about what you're looking to glean or accomplish. Intellect is driven by a different driver for accomplishments. Wisdom wants to, according to the way this is worded, do things that are going to accomplish his purposes. His purposes for the world and his purposes, more importantly, in your life, in your relationships. And so it takes wisdom. And the first part of wisdom is what? The fear of Yahweh. Fear him is the beginning of wisdom. And so if you're going to be fearing him, awe, reverence, respect for him, and he tells you, I know better than you do, and your culture does, and your government does, and your friends do, and your family does, on how to have a relationship with me. That's what he tells you. He says, I know better what I want in my relationship than what everybody else out there thinks they know. So wisdom is to try to get in line with that. Doesn't take smarts to get in line with that. And so here we're being told that wisdom is more precious than rubies. Length of days and riches and esteem are in the hands of wisdom. Wisdom, if you're walking within the context of being wise, what do you have? You have ways that are pleasant, paths that are peace. Verse 18, it says, she's a tree of life to those taking hold of her, and blessed are all those who retain her. Ah, there's an interesting part of the problem. It's not a problem that you people, all of you watching, whatever, have come to seeking to take a hold of the tree of life. But what about retaining it? You know, it's like when we read in John and he talks about, not John and James, when he talks about going and looking in the mirror and forgetting what you looked at. Are you going to retain the wisdom of saying, I saw it, and now wisdom dictates I do something about it? Wisdom dictates that when you see and you have something exposed and revealed to you, that you should do something with it. That's why you have parables like the parable of the talents, and they were given out. And what did Yeshua want to see? He wanted to see what they did with it. And so this retaining thing, the idea of retention is important. Okay, wisdom is the tree of life to those taking hold of it. However, are you going to retain it? A lot of you will sit here, listen to everything I say today, have a few aha moments, go home, and by Wednesday, it will have made no more difference in your life than if you had never heard it. Because you're not retaining it. Even though light bulbs went on, all this kind of revelation got clarified through the Ruach, through you and hearing what was read, things that you know that you can now start doing or change in your life, and you'll be all excited about it for like the sower of the seed. You'll be like the one that doesn't have the roots. And then somebody comes over and goes, and blows on you and you forgot everything. Or the one where the cares of the world came in and squeezed you out and crushed you out and distracted you from what you need to be doing. So it's not about information, because information is hard to retain. Anybody remember all the stuff they learned in their public school education or homeschool education? No, you don't remember all that. Matter of fact, I have children that we talk to all the time saying, well, you know, I study for hours, but I can't remember anything. I'm not retaining it. Why don't you retain information? Because it's just information unless you have a relationship with it. If you had experienced growing up through, for example, World War I or World War II or something that was back in the Civil War, or something was in another country when they talk about all of the conflicts in Europe, the stuff you study in history, if you had a relationship with it, because you were there, you'd remember it all real well. Or let's say you were doing something with mathematics and you had to constantly apply it to something that you do on a daily basis. It's part of your job. It's part of whatever task you're doing. You now have a relationship with that thing of information and applying it to something. So guess what? Your retention is going to be much higher because you now have a relationship with the material. You need to have a relationship with this material. For those of you that are listening somewhere, I'm holding up my scriptures. Okay, you have to have a relationship with it, not just an informational gathering type of thing going on. Because here it says, taking hold of the tree of life through wisdom is not going to do you any good, and it's not going to bless you. It says, blessed are those who retain the wisdom gleaned through embracing the tree of life. God's ways, all his paths are wisdom. All his paths are peace. All his paths are good. So wisdom would dictate you pay attention and do what he says. But we have to retain it. What's your problem? You're not relating to it. You're not applying it so that it becomes relational. You know, we all talk a good talk about, well, I want to love my neighbor as myself. I want to love the Yahweh with all my heart, blah, 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 blah. But until you start doing it on a daily basis and walking it out and seeing the relationship bless you and do the things he promises, blessings, keeping safe, changing the transformational process that Torah provides, it's just information that's in the context of a contract called covenant because you want to live forever. Hey, listen, all of us, if we're going to be honest, that's what motivated us. The idea that we'll have no more pain, no more sadness, no more tears, and we get to live forever. You are chasing the carrot. Some of you were running away from the stick. You were raised through the Christian, you know, mainstream of, you're going to go right to hell and burn and be tortured forever if you don't figure this out. All right? That doesn't sound very nice. I'd run away from that too. So some of you were motivated by one emotional, you know, idea of, I'm afraid of death. I'd like to be pain-free. I'd like to live forever. And the other one, some of you ran away from the, you know, I don't want to be tortured and burned and all that other stuff. By the way, not that I believe that's what happens, but just understand that's what you were taught. That's what got you here. Now, the reason you're here and not still in the mainstream is you came to realize that path doesn't necessarily lead where you're trying to go. So you changed your path. You still want the same things, though. You just realize you were in the wrong vehicle. Some of you realize that riding a bike or walking wasn't going to get you there. You needed to get in a car or a plane, whatever. You're taking a different path or using a different vehicle. And so here you are having those motivators. But now, as you study the word, you should realize, as I know all of you do at times, you go, this is incredible. And you're mind blown and you're excited. And then life starts happening for a few hours and you forget everything. And we laugh because it's true. But that, do you understand? That's part of what proves your Bible so true, is that when you read a parable like the parable of the sower, now you're thinking it's somebody else. And when it talks about, you know, the different types of dirt and the different types of ground, etc. So let me just pull that up real quick here just for a second. When we're in Matthew 13, let's just do it there. Let's just go there for a second. Because I think this is important, this idea of retaining. Why don't we retain the wisdom? All right? So here he goes, and he's explaining here. He says, you then hear the parable of the sower in verse 18. He says, when anyone hears the word of the reign of the kingdom and doesn't understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. So some of you are going to read that verse. And I don't know if I've ever explained it this way before, so who knows? Some of you, you know, scholars who've been listening to the teachings know what I said or didn't say, but I want you to hear this point this time. Some of you will listen to that and think it has to do with being a Bible scholar or educated or having a right teaching about this. It's informational. When anyone hears the word and doesn't understand it, because it wasn't explained to them. What if it has nothing to do with that? What if it has to do with the wicked one comes and snatches away from their heart because they didn't have a relationship? They didn't understand the relational aspect of it. It wasn't they didn't understand Shabbat. They didn't understand Kashrut. They didn't understand the Moedim. No, maybe it was because they didn't have it in their heart sown as a relationship. Let's take this in a different direction, maybe, than you've ever thought of it. Because some of you are thinking, well, you know, of course, it's like my friends who are still stuck in the mainstream or whatever, and they just don't understand. No, their eyes are closed, their ears are closed, and they haven't had them opened yet. It's not their fault. Abba has to do the eye opening and ear opening thing. We talk about that all the time. If you're not sure about that, listen to the Father and the Son teaching, okay? Do you know the Father and the Son? We go into that very clearly. But here, it says, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and doesn't understand it, then the wicked one comes and snatches away what was sown in his heart. So the person heard it, got excited about it to some degree, tried to put it up in their heart, but they didn't understand the relational part of it. One of the big pieces of that is what we're studying right now, the word covenant. See, if you have it in the form of covenant, verse 19 can't happen. If it's covenanted, no one can snatch it away. Because you've made a commitment. You agreed, I'm going to. And by the way, that agreement had no time limit. It was a permanent relationship. You agree to do, he agrees to take care of you. It's not like, well, I'm having a rough week. I'm going to agree to do what he says for a week and just fix a few things. No, it's a covenantal relationship. So he says, when anyone hears the word of the kingdom and doesn't understand that it needs to be a covenanted, relational thing, then the wicked one can come and snatch it away. Does that make more sense? And the wicked one can come and snatch it away. And that sown on the rocky places, this is he who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. Yet again, relationally, he has no root in himself, but is short-lived. Okay, so he likes the idea. But there's no real driving thing of a need. Let's maybe change the wording here a little bit. It was a want. I want this. I've been wanting. This is exciting. I love this. What I've always wanted. No, it wasn't a need. So it was short-lived. He had no root in himself. Where you take it and you realize it's that precious thing and you hold it and put it in and let it dig roots in. And how do you dig the roots in? By doing and applying and relating with the application of it. That's where the roots come in. Seeing that it works, experiencing that it works, experiencing that you can trust him and believe what he says digs down deep those roots. Because look what caused the person not to have the roots. It doesn't say that, oh, this awful person, he doesn't have any roots in himself. What a loser. Because some of us read this stuff going, those guys are all losers. I'm the one on the good ground. Are you so sure? He says, look, this person, don't read just about the root in himself. Focus on the problem. Pressure and persecution arises because of the thing he's all excited about. And that's what causes him to stumble. He's not now locked in, grounded, committed, and unshakable. This person is much more easily pressured, persecuted, and shaken, and caused to now go in a different direction. See, if you are in covenant correctly, fully, you know what there is? There's no person being on this planet or anywhere else that can leverage you out of it. That's the key here. Because your friends and family members are going to pressure you. What does pressure look like? Well, then I'm not going to talk to you anymore. We're going to disown you. You won't be invited to this anymore. We're going to fire you from the job because you need to keep Shabbat. It's leverage against you. If you are covenanted, you simply use the words that says, you got to do what you got to do. I can't move. I'm covenanted. I understand that you feel you need to do what you need to do. I don't blame you. Forgive them, Father. They don't know what they're doing. That's okay. No, instead you're going to get angry, upset, depressed, frustrated, and everything else in panic. Be careful that you're not this rocky ground, this stony ground. There's no wisdom in that. There's no retaining. See, we're told to cling, to cleave, to hold fast, to lay hold of. You got to get a grip on that. Some of you just need to get a grip, period. Okay, but you need to get a grip on this wisdom, on this relationship, on this covenant thing so that you are unshakable. How many of you have seen, probably all of you, seen either in cartoons or in movies, it doesn't matter, the same scene you see in all of these, the big storm is coming and the people are somehow like on a boat or something and they're like flying sideways, holding on to one of the posts that's in the boat or onto some piece of the furniture or something. And they're clinging for dear life on that. The wind is blowing and the thing is tossing. You know what I'm talking about? That feeling that's going on in that person's head, you need to have that for this. Well, you realize this is life. I can't let go. Because that person's thinking, if I let go, I'm dead. I'm going to drown. I'm going to get smashed around the boat. It's over. Are you holding on to this, his word, like that? Not the person with the stony ground. Persecution just blows wind on you. Or pressure from family, friends, bosses, whatever. Oh, you don't believe in that stuff, do you? Don't you know that stuff was done away with? What, are you a legalist now? You're going to go burn in hell. We need to pray for you. You're in sin now because you're trying to keep the truth. Obeying commandments somehow is now sin. Anybody's ever heard that? You can't believe the stuff that's going on out there, but yet you, without the root in you, relationally, driven in there, where you're clinging and holding on to it, you are actually bothered by these things happening to you. You should feel sad that the person is in such a messed up place that they could treat you that way. But you're not sad that way. You're sad because, well, now my mom isn't going to talk to me anymore. That's her choice, not yours. But you made a different choice. Like when he says you have to be willing to leave your riches behind, or your father who's dying behind, all the time. You have to leave all these things behind and follow him. Are you not willing to leave everything behind and follow him? No, but I still have all these other relationships. I promise you, if I interviewed every one of you, you have at least one, if not more, relationships with people you should not. That are reasons, scripturally, why you should not be in relationship, because you can't let it go. And there's relationships you should have that you're very weak on and very reluctant about because it challenges the ones you don't want to let go of. And so you make unwise choices there. There are relationships that even if it's not one that you should let go of, there's ones that have already been damaged or severed that you're still upset that you don't have them anymore because it's not fair that my keeping Torah cost me this. He wants you to be willing to lay down everything, including your life, for him. Do you not think that Avraham did not think of everything that he had in his son to offer him up? Or to just leave all his family just to get up and go when he was told to go? Or Yeshua to lay down his life? Yeshua doesn't lay down his life. We're all lost. There's no point. And we're supposed to pick up our stake and follow him. But yet we talk the talk, but do we walk the walk? And when we don't walk the walk, it's because we're not retaining. And we're not retaining that wisdom because we don't have the root in ourselves, because we're not building it into a relational experience and not just an informational experience. I don't know how much more I can say that every week now. Stop focusing just on information. Oh, I got people sending me all kinds of links to all kinds of teaching all the time because of some new information. But where's your relationship with the Word and with him and with both the Father and the Son, etc.? And then your relationship with the brother and the sisters around you. Where is that? What level of that are you retaining, feeding, cultivating, putting energy into? Oh no, I'm focused on all this latest, greatest, new informational crack. And you guys are all addicted. I haven't said that in a while, but you guys are all into new doctrinal understanding crack. The latest and greatest fringe thing out there, whatever it is. Instead of focusing on retaining wisdom. Verse 22. And actually, at the end of verse 21, the whole point is that when the pressure and everything comes, notice he says immediately he stumbles. By stumbles, let's call it, freaks out, panics, gets upset, gets depressed, whatever. That's what stumbles means. Don't only read that as commits some sort of sin and breaks a Torah command, but stumbles. Stumbles in their what? In their covenant, in their trust and belief, in their emunah. Fully trusting in Yah, now you start to stumble. Immediately you're questioning, you're doubting, and you're fearful. That's what stumbling is. So if you respond to the pressure and persecutions with fear, with doubt, with panic, you're this kind of ground. Don't be all excited, I'm good ground, blah, blah, blah. You know what? Let the farmer tilling the ground decide what kind of ground you are. Does the dirt tell the farmer what kind of ground it is? Yah's going to start plowing the field and see how ready your field is and how full of thorns and rocks and everything else it is. You wonder about your trials and all the other things you go through? Guess what? It's the farmer getting out the plow to see what's going on, and gets the tiller out, and he's tilling up that ground to see what's going on. Verse 22, and that sown among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the worry of this age and the deceit of riches choke the word, and it becomes fruitless. So what's that? The worry of this age. All those things that have you in that negative emotion that takes away your trust and faith. Same thing we were talking about previously with the stony ground. That was pressure and persecution. This is now worry and panic. And, well, I don't know if we can pay our bills. And I don't know, what if the world ends tomorrow? What if the blood moons does this? What if the government shuts down? What if they have a bank holiday? What if blah, 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 blah. Stop. You guys are a bunch of whiny Israelites. Knock it off. That's that kind of ground. You hear the word, but how can you hear the word and still worry? What are you afraid of? What are you worried about? Do you not know who's in charge? Don't you trust that he's in charge? This is the emunah factor, to fully trust and believe that he has everything in control. You just have to do with all your heart, with all your being, the best you can. And trust that that's enough. And do it in relationship, without fear, without doubt. Oh, well, I'm all worried about things. You know, in chapter 6 of Matthew, you know, he says, in 28, he goes, so why do you worry about clothing? Why do you worry about, you know, starts off, let's see, earlier, verse 25. Because of this, I say to you, do not worry about your life, what you shall eat and drink. Why are you worrying? Do you not understand the covenant is that if you trust him and do your part, he'll provide. In all your worrying, did you add a cubit to anything? Did it put more food on your table? Did it change the amount you were being paid at your job? What did worry ever do for you? It just showed, yeah, you weren't trusting him. However, moments where you step out in faith and trust, you've seen some miraculous things happen, haven't you? And then you go back to worrying again. Why? None of you hearing my voice probably have ever really been in true poverty. I mean, out there with like dirt floors, no indoor plumbing, no electricity, no food on the table, just living on like rice and whatever. You know what I'm saying? Where you had to go get your non-potable water and boil it. You don't understand really what that's like. Go to, you know, places in Central America, South America, Africa, India. Go see what that really looks like. You spoil a bunch of Israelites. And you're all whining about all your stuff. Well, you know, I'm upset because I couldn't find the coat I wanted on sale. So I feel terrible for you. Play a little violin. You know, you go, do any of you ever go and look at, and you could do that here in the Appalachian Mountains, and you drive around, you can see some of the old cabins and stuff that they still have, that they could like a little tourist sites. You know, you can see some of the old houses that were built in the 17, 1800s. Do you ever notice that there's like just a hook for one clothing, and they had the one you were wearing and the other one, that's it. Two outfits. You don't see dressers and closets to put all of your stuff. You don't have to raise your hand, but how many of you don't have enough room in your house or apartment for all your stuff? Boy, you guys are spoiled. Yet you whine and complain, and you're complaining because you don't have enough room for all your stuff. And don't recognize how spoiled you are. But what does he say? He says, stop worrying. Worry, 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 worry. Whine, whine, whine. He says, then he goes into, is life more than food and body more than clothing? Goes into all these things. Then finally he goes down to the bottom and he says, look, do not worry then, saying, what shall we eat in verse 31? What shall we drink? What are we going to wear? What am I going to do this? I can't afford that. Blah, blah. How are we going to pay our bills? Blah, 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 blah. For all these the Gentiles seek for, and your heavenly Father knows that you need all these. He says, but seek first the kingdom of Elohim and his righteousness, and all these matters shall be added to you. It doesn't say, by the way, just lay back and don't work. You do your part with all your might, strength, and being. But you do it trusting that he will open up the doors and guide your footsteps to what you need to do. He says, 6 days you shall work. Don't misunderstand this means, oh, I'm just going to sit back and it's all just going to show up like manna from heaven on my doorstep. That's not what it's saying there. But he says, don't worry then about tomorrow. Tomorrow has its own worries. Each day has enough evil for itself. You've got to understand that all of that stuff that you're all messed up about doesn't really exist. What do I mean by that? Right now is the only reality. Yesterday's not real. Tomorrow's not real. They haven't happened yet. The one that yesterday, it already happened? Well, it already happened. Nothing you can do about it. Tomorrow hasn't happened yet. So the only reality is now. Right now, do you have food, shelter, clothing, whatever? Do you have those things? Then why are you worried about tomorrow? And certainly, why are you all upset about what happened yesterday? That's yesterday. It's gone. We can learn from yesterday, hopefully. But I know a lot of us still fight about yesterday because we hold on like elephants to everything. And we keep killing each other over, well, you know, 10 years ago when you did that, you know, I've been with you all these years, you had all these years, just blah, blah. You know what? How about now? Can we just start with now, change now, grow now, live now? Why do you need to ruin now? Because yesterday sucked. I'm trying to be blunt. Okay, yesterday was bad, so let's ruin today. Is that wisdom? Is there any wisdom in that? Okay, I get it. Yesterday was a bad day. Maybe you've had a bad month. Maybe you've had a bad year. So should I let that ruin today? That's why Yahweh gives us Shabbat, so that one day in seven, we can say this day can be a good day. It doesn't matter what yesterday was. It doesn't matter what tomorrow will bring. Today, I can sit at the feet of the Master and read his word, and I can be with my brethren, and we can sing and praise his name, and that's a good day. It should always be a good day. In Hebrew, we would call that a Yom Tov. Okay? So the Jews refer to the holy days as Yom Tovs, or the more Yiddish than a Yontov. Okay? But it's Yom Tov. Yom is day. Tov is good. Okay? Day is good. Shabbat, Yom Tov. It's a good day. They're his days. But we worry. Oh, we worry so much. Let's go back to chapter 13. So it says here, again in verse 22, that's sown among the thorns. Here's the word, and they worry. And guess what? And they also chase after the deceit of riches. What is the deceit of riches? The idea that somehow money is going to solve everything. Well, if we just had more money, it would fix everything. That's a deceit. That's a lie. Now, that's not to say that if you had more money, you couldn't do more things. Yes, you could. Provided you did things with it, not just buy more junk and more stuff. But there's a lot of deceit in money. I'm not saying you shouldn't have any. I'd like to have a lot of it, and I work hard to have some because I can do things with it. You know what? When someone comes to me who's hungry, I can help them eat. I can't do that if I don't have any money. Somebody needs a car. Somebody needs some help with shelter for a few days because their house got destroyed. It takes money. Any kind of bad thing that goes on, it usually is helpful to have some money to do something for. But don't go to the deceit that somehow money, here's the deceit, money will fix your problems. No, with money you can help people while they're dealing with theirs. It won't fix their problem, but you can help them deal with their problem. But that's the deceit of riches. So all this stuff goes on, worries, deceit of riches. Deceit of riches is why people will take that job that works on Saturday. Or they'll go in and get double pay on a holy day because the holy day fell on a weekend. Oh, but you don't understand, Rabbi. I can get double pay. No, you don't understand. That's going to cut your financial throat in the long run. No, it won't. I'm going to make more money. Tomorrow you might make more money. I have a little bit longer view of this than you do, apparently. I'm looking forward to a time when we won't need any money. But at the moment, they have these things, the worry and the deceit of riches. He says, and what do? It chokes the word to make it fruitless. So it's not like you forget the word. I believe what you're doing here is you're twisting it, you're spinning it into something that it's not supposed to be. So it no longer looks like it's supposed to. This is where you justify the things you do that really is not what Yahweh said to do. Or you justify not doing what he says to do because you somehow think that it's okay not to do it. Because he says what you did is it became fruitless. The word became fruitless. So it's not that you disagreed with it, but you did something to make it not bear the appropriate fruit. Okay, so it became fruitless. And that's sown on the good soil, which is all, that's all of us, right? Everybody in the room, we're all the good soil guys. As he who hears the word and understands it, who indeed bears fruit and yields. So we go back to the covenantal stuff we're reading in Proverbs. Wisdom, knowledge, and understanding. So that person who has the understanding understands that it's relational, understands that it's something to be retained, understands a whole wide range of things. That person's going to bear fruit and yield 100, 60, or 30. You see how that's what's going on in Proverbs 3? See, because you all think you're the good soil. You're only the good soil if you're, first of all, not being any of the things that are in the bad soil. Don't just focus on that one verse that talked about good soil. Make sure how you handle worry, how you handle pressure, how you handle the deceit related to riches. He didn't say riches were the problem. It's the deceit part. Be careful. He never attacked riches. Everybody in your heroes list in the Bible were rich. Just fact. But if you watch and read, they worked their you-know-whats off. But they were rich. They had flocks and they had crops and they worked hard and they built things. Look, Yeshua was raised doing very nothing. He was a carpenter. Well, guess what? That's a lot of work in those days, and moving heavy things and lifting things and doing all kinds of stuff. He didn't just sit around and do nothing. Okay, he wasn't just sitting there just reading the Bible. He worked. And what does he tell you, all you ones out there? He says, my Father works, and so do I, and so should you. But he was saying it like, why are you surprised seeing me work? My Father works, I'm his son, I should be working, we work. We do what we need to do. Let's go back now to Proverbs. I left off at the end of 17, okay? 18, we talked about the tree of life, okay? So 19, well, let's go back even this here. So if you understand what we're talking about, in verse 18 she said, the wisdom is a tree of life to those who take a hold of wisdom. So how do you take a hold of wisdom? You take it and apply it. And blessed are all who then retain that. Because some of us are really good at applying things for a little while. But are you retaining it? Remember, we talked about this many times. Thinking goes eventually to emotions, which ends up being actions. But here's the part I want to focus on. Actions, when repeated over time, become habits. If you're not doing it enough over enough of a time, then you're not going to be retaining it as a habit. You have to keep doing and doing and doing until it becomes something you retain as a part of you. I remember either hearing somewhere or reading somewhere, somebody was talking about how they love when people come up to them and say, you know, this is a Jew, an Orthodox Jew, and said, why do you keep the Torah? And the Jew looked at him and said, I don't understand your question. What do you mean? It's like asking someone, why do you breathe? Well, go ask a fish why it swims. Go ask a bird why it flies. What do you mean, why do I keep the Torah? That's why I exist. To a Jew, he was created to keep Torah. But guess what? It wasn't for the Jew only. Actually, it wasn't given to the Jew only. It's not even like it was given to the Jew and now it's for everybody. It's given to all of Israel. There were 12 tribes at Sinai and a mixed multitude. But are you at that place yet when someone challenges your Torah observance, you look at them like, I don't understand the question. Well, I need you to work on Saturday. Well, I don't understand. What do you mean you need me to work on Saturday? Not happening. Well, then you're going to lose your job. Well, then I'm going to lose my job. That's your choice. But then you understand, Yahweh wouldn't want me to not be able to pay my bills. Have any of you been unemployed? Everybody, have you found another job? Did you somehow manage to have food and shelter while you were unemployed? What are you worried about? Oh, because I've had people tell me literally, well, Yahweh wouldn't want me to lose my job and then I couldn't take care of my family. Why? Because that's the only job you could ever find? As a matter of fact, I bet you if I talked to you 3 weeks ago, you didn't even like the job. As a matter of fact, you were probably praying for another job. Now all of a sudden, you're like the guys looking back at Egypt for the leeks. All of a sudden, it's the greatest job of all time that you used to hate and wish you could do something else. Because now what's happened? You're fearful, you're panicking. So all of a sudden, things look different through those filters, through those glasses. Instead of being, no, I'm a covenanted Israelite, I cannot work on Shabbat. I'm sorry if that inconveniences the company. I'm sorry if that presents a problem to you as my supervisor, but I can't do it. But you may want to throw in, and just by the way, which is also why you get an honest day's work from me for an honest day's pay, which is also why I'm not sitting here on Facebook or Twitter or some other thing while I'm working. You better not be. And I'm not sitting on my phone taking personal calls and I'm doing all this other stuff. You need to be giving that employer your full 100% effort. And then you can look the boss in the eye and say, look, I don't know what you get from everybody else. I'm not judging everybody else. But I would like to think that what you get from me is worth making an adjustment. Because I don't think, and this isn't bragging, I don't think you can replace me with what I give you. And if you think you can, great, I'll go get another job. Somebody else will appreciate what I do. Turn it back around. Hey, no problem. I'm sure there's lots of people out there who want a person who works as hard as I do. But you better mean it. You better be able to defend that. Some of you are out there doing the minimum on your job and then whine about the fact that they want to now start having you come in on Saturday. And you're not the top employee. I've worked many jobs, and I can promise you that I've had many employers bend into a pretzel because they couldn't replace me. Because I made sure that I was as irreplaceable a cog in that machine as there could be. I made sure I knew how to do everything, even stuff that nobody else knew, and that if anybody ever left that knew how to do the things, I might be the only one that knows how to do it, and they would need me. And they always saw me working. They never saw me goofing, playing, or wasting anybody's time and taking advantage of them. Because a wise employer will recognize how hard it is to find a good, hard-working employee. And it costs a lot of money for them to go through agencies and advertisements and websites to try to get a good employee. And if you could be that good, they'll do anything to keep you. Of course, that's assuming you have a wise employer. There's a lot of really unwise and dumb employers. And guess what? You don't need to be working for those people. Let Yahweh give you a wise employer. So let yourself lose that job and go get a better one. Because I believe Yahweh can put every one of you in a better job. Why don't you believe that? Because you've got to live in the place called worry, fear, doubt, panic. Why do you have a problem with that? Unbelievable. Yahweh founded, verse 19, Yahweh founded the earth by wisdom. He established the heavens by understanding. By his knowledge, the depths were broken up and the clouds dropped down dew. He's trying to say, look, Yahweh built the whole earth in a relational manner. He used wisdom so that the earth functions in a synergistic way. Everything kind of works together. We breathe out carbon dioxide. Guess what? The plants need that. And they breathe back to us oxygen. We need that. That's wisdom. That's brilliant. Incredible stuff. I mean, it's not by accident that stuff exists that way. I just mentioned one example. We could sit there forever and never cover even a fraction of everything that's so brilliant in the system. Not even the slightest fraction could we cover. But just use that one example. That actually was amazing to me. I remember that. I said one of the few things I remember as a kid in elementary school, learning about how the plants need what comes out of our mouths and they give us what we need to go in our mouths. That we need to breathe in that oxygen and we give them the CO2. Incredible. What a system that he put together. But yet, we like to live in that place called insecure, fear, doubt, panic, whatever. But he founded everything with wisdom, with understanding. So he understood what he was doing and how it would work. And so for us to think we know better is foolishness. There's no wisdom in that. He's trying to tell you here, he built everything knowing exactly what he was doing, understanding how they would interact, all of the elements together, and there was wisdom that made it all work together. And then we're going to sit here and going, oh, but yeah, but I'm smarter than that. My son, verse 21, let them not depart from your eyes. Watch over sound wisdom and discretion. So now we have another little piece here, which I think we could squeeze in. There's more than one type of wisdom. There's sound wisdom, apparently. And I would guess, because it's not mentioned here, if you have sound wisdom, there's also unsound wisdom. And so he's making a distinction of, we have to be careful what the source of our wisdom is. He's saying, my son, let them not depart from your eyes. By the way, it means that when you're watching out there going, you know what? Yahweh's in charge. He's in control. The earth still holds together. Sun, star, moons, you know, all that stuff out there. The seas, the earth, the trees, plants, everything's sort of going along. And you know what? Everything on this planet seems to know what it needs to do except us. Trees don't go to school. Trees don't get YouTube videos and stuff to figure out how to live. Neither do fish or birds or any other animal. They don't have to like go on YouTube to go to like how to. You do that for almost everything in your life. I don't know how to do this. Okay, let me see if there's a YouTube video. And most things on this planet function perfectly well without any of that. Except us. By the way, that's why he designed the system for us, where we have an instruction manual, our scriptures. He put teachers into the system to guide, counselors, the fivefold ministry. No, but yet we struggle. He says, my son, don't let them depart. He says, watch over sound wisdom. And now this is a key part that we lack also. We talked about this in one of the previous parts because it came up in chapter 1 or 2. Discretion. We have a really hard time with discretion. We have a really hard time with discerning and making better decisions, which shows that we have discretion. We tend to fall for anything and be susceptible to the negative influences of other people and not have enough discretion to know we shouldn't be doing this or we shouldn't be spending our time here or whatever because we don't have the sound wisdom. He says, watch over sound wisdom. And if you have the sound wisdom, it will enhance your discretion. I'm going to say it that way. I believe it will help with the discretion part. He says, then if you watch over them, then they become life to your being and an adorning to your neck. Now, the word adorning there actually comes to the Hebrew that means favor. So in other words, it brings approval or favor to you. Then you would walk safely in your way and your foot would not stumble. That goes back to the proverb we just read that Yeshua gave when he talked about the sower of the seed. You want to walk safely? You want to not stumble? Like the person in the stony ground would then stumble? If you would adorn your neck, if you would embrace and watch over, by the way, the key words there is watch over the sound wisdom. Watch over. Think soldier guarding over somebody who has, or watching over like you would a baby. Okay, you put the baby down to lay down. What do you do when you watch over a baby? You kind of go and check on them on a regular basis, make sure they're okay, make sure they're still asleep. If they wake up today, you're watching, you're aware. Watching over means a heightened level of awareness that this needs to be watched. Because if it's not watched, something will go wrong. If you don't watch over sound wisdom, unsound wisdom will come in. Or no wisdom. You just won't have any wisdom at all. You'll just lack wisdom completely. Because if you would do this, then you would walk safely in your way and your foot would not stumble. When you lie down, you need not be afraid. When you shall lie down, you and your sleep shall be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden dread, nor of the ruin of the wrong when it comes. For Yahweh is at your side, and he shall guard your foot from being caught, but not unless you're doing all this other stuff. Don't fall into the Christianese lie. Well, I shouldn't call it a lie. Trap. Okay, don't fall into that mainstream trap of reading a verse and forgetting what led up to that verse. Or not even looking to see what led up to that verse. We already read the verses before, so you shouldn't forget that he's only telling you Yahweh's at your side, he's guarding your foot, if all this other covenantal stuff is going on. He's not promising you to do it just because you happen to know that verse exists. Oh, Yahweh's at my side. How do I know? Well, because Proverbs 3:26 says so. Well, no, Yahweh's at your side in the context of everything that came already before that verse. Because the person who said it in verse 26 is connecting it to, if you do this, 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 and this, then you can rest assured Yahweh's at your side and shall guard your foot. Which foot? Oh, the one that you now know where to put because you're walking safely, because you're guarding after wisdom, sound wisdom specifically. Are we understanding this? Are we receiving it? Well, some words like understanding, we can get confused here. Are you receiving that information that you now can take and see what you need to do to develop it into a relational thing where you can gain real understanding? He says, do not withhold good from those who deserve it when it's in your power of your hand to do so. Do not say to your neighbor, go and come back tomorrow, I give it, when you have it with you. That's why I've learned over the years, I was guilty of this, and I fixed that for the most part. I've worked hard to fix it. Love, you got to love when people say, I'll pray for you. What's the matter? You got some place to go? Why not do it right now? You in a rush? You can't stop for 2 minutes and pray for me? Why would you tell me you're going to pray for me? Why not just do it? And I learned that lesson many years ago because I met somebody who was, I was going to say really focused on it, had developed this habit. So he would say to me, I want to pray for you. Can I do it now? Because guess what? I don't know about you, but when I told people I could pray for them, many times, maybe even more often than not, I didn't remember. Life got busy and I got distracted. Squirrel, squirrel, squirrel. Right? And I didn't pray. Anybody guilty of that? Instead, why not, if it's in your power to do good, and by the way, if I pray with you, you will feel that love and relationship much more than thinking, I wonder if he remembered to pray for me. I wonder what he said when he prayed for me. Maybe he prayed, Yahweh, please, this person's annoying, picking all the time, do something with it. They keep bothering me with all their problems. Maybe that's what you think the person prayed. But how about if they pray with you right there? You can hear their concern, their love, and their heart being with you in your struggle. That's good. It says when it's in your power to do good, that will make someone feel better, knowing that you had a genuine heart for them when you prayed for them with them. Well, do not plan evil against your neighbor, seeing he dwells safely beside you, verse 29. Do not strive with a man without cause, if he has done you no evil. Now that's a hard verse. Okay. let's go to verse 29 first. Do not plan evil against your neighbor, seeing he dwells safely with you, beside you. Okay, I'm going to take that probably completely out of context to say, generally speaking, will you just leave people alone in their walk? Okay, let them walk out their own salvation in fear and trembling. You know, and I'll say this also in another way. Some of you like to do this, and I'm sorry if you, because I'm really not a big fan. There's no reason for you to have all of your stuff in public social media. Why do you have to live life on the internet? Why does everybody need to know what's going on in your life? And you have no idea how often you'll say something you probably shouldn't have said. Stop that. But in the meantime, I'm not saying don't go on Facebook. Facebook is really good for sharing information with people that you can reach a lot of people all at once. That's why I post teachings there. When was the last time any of you saw me post anything personal? Like never? Except maybe a happy anniversary to my wife. And only because I figure everybody expects me to do that. Because really, that's between me and her. I don't need to share that with everybody. Okay? I have no control of birthdays. Facebook does that automatically. They just put that out there. Hey, by the way, it's so-and-so's birthday. Unless, of course, you don't tell Facebook when your birthday is, but you know. But just understand that there's no reason to live out in public like that. Where's the honor and shame issues being dealt with as far as just people just throwing stuff out there? But I want you to understand the next part of this when it says, do not strive with a man without cause. I don't even know how I want to say this. I'll ask a question. Do you really feel confident, especially when you're emotionally upset, to judge whether or not you have a real cause? Do you actually, are you really qualified to decide that you actually are angry with cause or striving with cause? Because you'll argue that there was a cause. But if I was the one making that same argument and you were witnessing it and you weren't emotionally involved, would you think that I was overreacting? Would you think that I had cause? You think you have cause because you're the one who's all upset. You've had your emotions out there that should have been in your feelings bags and you had somebody step on it. So you have cause. But you should be asking the question, if this was somebody else, would I, as a judge, if I had that job, believe that there was cause? Because cause is one of those things that comes up in court all the time. Was there justification? Was there a cause that justified the action? Was there just cause to do this or that? Because it says here, do not strive with a man without cause. But who gets to decide that? I would venture to say that every fight you've ever had with anybody, you thought you had cause. Can we agree? I don't care if it's with your family member or a friend or a boss, a husband, a wife, parents with children. Every fight you've ever had, you believed you had cause. And how often did you find out that what you were all upset about didn't actually happen the way you thought and you were completely wrong? That happens a lot. I would say at least 25 to 50% of the time. So it turned out you really didn't have cause. What instead is you caused the problem because you overreacted. So let's be careful with verse 30. Do not strive with a man without cause if he has done you no evil. Okay? Now bear in mind it says evil, which means he has, now we're raising it to a high level to have cause. It has to be done doing evil, which means doing something that's against Torah. All right? Disagreeing about meals or about cars that you purchase or about, I mean, a lot of things are not Torah related. These disagreements that we fight over, somebody left the toothpaste cover off or the toilet bowl seat up or whatever. Okay? These are inconveniences and annoying, but they're not cause for strife because no evil was done. I would say this is another reason, verse 30, for you to be in counsel, to have somebody on the outside help you understand whether or not there was cause. Is that fair? Because I'm going to tell you, don't be offended, the person emotionally in that moment is not qualified to decide he has cause. Including me, if I'm in an issue with somebody and I'm emotional, I am no longer, once the emotions kick in and I'm angry, upset, hurt, depressed, whatever it is, I am no longer qualified to decide if there was cause. That's why we have to go to courts for a lot of things, because you have a jury of people that are not emotionally involved to decide whether or not there was just cause. You need to have somebody in your life, friends, some other accountability partners, who you know are going to be honest. Now, here's the problem. Most of you go to your friends, and your friend's going to believe everything you say about your husband or your wife, because after all, they're your friend, and you wouldn't lie to them. You couldn't possibly be coloring it funny or exaggerating or misunderstanding. That would never happen, right? Never. You would never call your friend about your spouse or about your children or about your boss and exaggerate. That would, and no. Because it's colored through your emotionally exaggerated filters. And your friend, being your friend, is going to be like, that terrible, awful, blah, 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 whatever they say. And now they're bandwagoning and joining on your side and telling you, oh, that son of a, you know what, I'm with you. Really? And you have no idea really what happened if you're hearing the story. I almost, without exception, in a council session where there's strife, make sure that the parties involved understand that I will never claim that I know what really happened. I don't care what each one of them says. The only thing that I'm pretty sure happened is if there's anything that they agree. If they both say it happened, I'll believe that probably happened. But otherwise, I will not assert at any point, thank you for sharing that with me. Now let me tell you, here's my judgment because now I know what happened. So you as a friend, family, or whatever, if somebody comes to you, never, ever assume you're getting the unfiltered reality. I wasn't going to say getting the truth, because it is their, that's their truth at that moment. That's through their filters, that's all they saw. But you're getting a filtered reality. Can we understand what I'm saying here? You are getting a reality that they experience filtered through their emotional response. And that is not what really happened. And through the emotional response, they're going to attribute often motive, well, that person did that on purpose and they did that just to get me mad. You don't know that. Not unless they said, I did that to get you mad. Well, then you know it. But even then, that might not even be true. They may just do that to push your buttons. Well, you did that to upset me. Oh, yeah, I did. But maybe they really didn't. But now they want to just make you madder because now you're in a fight. So that's not even the truth, even though they admitted doing it. And you're thinking, well, he admitted doing it. Well, but he was just trying to get you even more mad. And so we have to recognize our inability to see reality correctly because we're filtering it through our emotions. So when it says something like here, do not strive with a man without cause, you're all sitting going, I never do that. I always have cause. Of course you do. And that's why nobody wants my job, because I have to deal with sorting out all of that, because everybody does it with cause. Just cause, righteous indignation. Come on. Once you got emotional about it, you were not seeing clearly. There are certain parts that you did not see correctly. I'm not saying you didn't see any of it correctly. There are aspects, colors, nuances of the whole thing that you definitely had going through an emotional filter that made that reality somewhat imperfect to what really happened. So let's be really careful with that. Actually, we got to end here. And I was going to get to the end of let's see. Now we'll just wait. Okay. We'll end it here on verse 30. All right. Let's go ahead and pray. Avinu Malkeinu, our Father, our King. Father, we come to you. And Father, there's so much to learn. So much wisdom in your word. So much that we can glean and to develop a relationship so we can have understanding and knowledge of you, the true Elohim. Father, help us to recognize that it's wisdom, not intellect, that makes the difference. That all of us were endowed by you, our Creator, with the ability to apply wisdom. And we don't have to figure anything out, but just take what you say and apply it, and that is wisdom. And so, Father, we thank you for your word. We thank you for eyes to see, ears to hear, and a heart to receive. Father, help us to receive also all of the correction, the reproof as to how we've been doing things in our lives, so that ultimately we can go through the transformational process as we go from what we are into what you are, as we change from what we are into the image of Yeshua, our Messiah, and that, Father, that we would learn to be humble enough to receive those changes. And then in applying them consistently to have them become a change, not only a thing that we're doing, but it becomes who we are, that we actually become that person. We become like Yeshua. So, Father, we want to thank you, and just from the bottom of our hearts, from all the way through to our bones and our marrow, to appreciate how much we feel your love and caring to give us these instructions and give us the strength and the patience and the encouragement to take them and apply them so they may bear fruit. Father, we thank you, we bless you, and we give you all glory and all honor in our appreciation of your word. In the name of our Messiah, the living word, Yeshua, amen, the amen.